So in the last decade of the 20th century, Marcel Duchamp's fountain was the subject of a series of interventions by artists who each attempted more or less successfully to urinate in it. Their iconoclasm was actually directed against authorised replicas of the original sculpture, this one here, which disappeared shortly after it was famously refused exhibition space by the American Society of Independent Artists in 1917 in New York. These reproductions of the urinal proliferated in the 50s and 60s, facilitating its circulation on the commercial market, among networks of galleries and museums, and within the discursive economy of the aesthetic sphere. These acts of vandalism, which were perpetrated in the 90s and 2000, can be thought of as constituting a tradition of sorts, which might be imagined as an accompaniment to the unending stream of critical commentary on this icon of modern art, to which this talk makes another contribution. So I'm going to recount the facts of the individual cases, there are five of them, and argue against their implicit interpretations of the ready-made in a fresh approach to an object that is not directly accessible to us anymore. So that's Brian Eno. I'm actually going to go who's the first of these artists. And actually, this first quote comes from a book, his diary, that was mentioned earlier on in the first talk. So in that autobiographical sketch, A Year with Swollen Appendices, Brian Eno describes how he urinated on a replica of Fountain at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, at an exhibit which was exhibited as part of High Art and High and Low, Modern Art and Popular Culture, which ran from October 1990 to January 1991. And on the 23rd of October, Eno was due to deliver a talk in the programme of performances accompanying the show. He claims that he constructed a pipette-like contraption out of plastic tubing and galvanised wire, fed it through a gap between the planes of the glass display case, and by that means transferred a few drops of pre-prepared urine onto the sculpture. And this intervention formed the basis of his lecture in the evening. The idea was apparently to return the urinal to the realm of the everyday, restoring what he believed to be its radically democratic potential, the implication that anything can be art and that therefore anyone can be an artist. However, Eno misconstrued the implication of the ready-made, which in my view is not a mass message, positive message of creative liberation. Rather, Fountain forces us to focus critically on the institutional mechanisms that confer recognition on works of art as such. The category of the artist is one such institutional mechanism, caricatured in the signature of the supposed author added to the urinal R. Mutt. The assertion of non-art as art, then, necessarily draws attention to the cultural field into which it is inserted, and which either accepts or rejects its claims of legitimacy. With the ready-made, Duchamp made this procedure the substantive content of the work of art, so he's not merely highlighting the aesthetic qualities of functional items, irrespective of the context in which they are encountered, as Eno's belief that this is about the desire to return the urinal to the realm of the everyday tends to assume. By submitting an object that had not been constituted artistically to the independents, Duchamp instead sought to reveal the policing of aesthetic value that was still operative behind the supposedly radically democratic selection process adopted by that organization. They had been founded on a principle of imposing no restrictions on the right to exhibit other than the payment of a nominal membership fee. But the board of directors, of which Duchamp was himself a member, nevertheless voted by a narrow margin to reject this submission. In his book, Eno critiques the consecrated status that subsequently has been granted to the sculpture by official culture, while still drawing legitimacy from it, albeit somewhat playfully, saying, "I've always wanted to urinate on that piece of art to leave my small mark on art history." So that's Kendall Gears, and that's a work of his that I'll mention in a moment. Well, in 1993, Venice Biennale admitted exhibits from South Africa for the first time since protests at the festival in 1968. Kendall Gears, a white artist who had been active in the anti-apartheid struggle, responded by changing the birth date on his identity papers to 1968. And as well as its historical, wider historical associations, that's also the year that Duchamp died. And at the major retrospective, Marcel Duchamp, held at the Palazzo Grazzi from April to July 1993, Gears reportedly urinated on the replica of Fountain. His body of work demonstrates a sustained engagement with Duchamp's ready-mades. He's reworked many of them in different ways over the years. And he sort of simultaneously invokes and attacks the legacy of Duchamp. His own iconoclastic impulse is often overtly politicized in a way that's not true of his interlocutor, but his importance for it is nevertheless obvious from the frequency which he's returned to him over the course of his career. And by urinating in the urinal, Gears arguably echoed the critical intention of the original sculpture, to the extent that his intervention pointed to the institutional complex that was in Framing Fountain in Venice in 1993. In New York, in 1917, the Independents, as I've mentioned, rejected the claim to legitimacy made for this provocatively banal object, leading to Duchamp's resignation in protest from the board of directors. The sculpture effectively staged its own exclusion from the institution of art as a spectacle, while Gears's intervention targeted the recuperation of the ready-made, now installed in the gallery system, thoroughly assimilated to official culture. The renown retrospectively accorded to this work of art undoubtedly modifies its meaning, given that this consists essentially in its relation to the cultural field treated self-reflexively and performatively. However, Gears's physical assault on the replica left its consecrated status intact, perhaps even reinforcing it by renewing the relevance of this urinal as a site of artistic practice. So moving on, that's Pierre Pinocelli. And in May 1993, the Caridà in Nîmes opened with an inaugural exhibition entitled The Exhilaration of the Real, which included a replica of a fountain on loan from the Centre Georges Pompidou in Paris. And on the 24th of August, Pierre Pinocelli struck the sculpture with a hammer and deposited some liquid in it, either urine, as he claimed, or tea, according to the director of the museum. Pinocelli was an underground artist influenced by the Situationists. His previous performances included extorting 10 francs from a bank with a sawed-off shotgun and smashing toys outside a department store whilst dressed as Santa Claus. And he opposed the decision by Duchamp in collaboration with others to authorize reproductions of the ready-made in the 50s and 60s. He argued in court that because it was a replica, the piece he had attacked was practically worthless. If anything, he had added to its value and should be remunerated. And he also put forward the argument that the, quote, invitation to urinate is offered ipso facto by the object, thus refusing its consecrated status and disingenuously treating it as a wholly functional item, albeit one without plumbing. he was given a 1 month suspended sentence for the voluntary degradation of a monument or an object of public utility. I really like this phrasing, as if the court itself is prevaricating about whether this is, you know, a work of art or just a public convenience. He carried on with this on the 4th of January 2006, so many years later in Paris. He once again took a hammer to the sculpture, and this time he was fined €200,000 for moral damages and €14,352 for material damages. Again, I just sort of quite like this uneven quantification of value in moral and material terms, which kind of articulates the same ambiguous boundary that the transgression of which was integral to the first fountain. So the legal proceedings ensuing from his acts of vandalism suggest the same question posed by the sculptor in 1917, but in a different context. You know, what makes this urinal a work of art? And the power to confer such legitimacy invested in the network of institutions, discourses, and practices that constitutes the cultural field is in this case ultimately backed by the state. Before the court in 1993, Pinocelli questioned the consecrated status of the object specifically as a replica, disqualifying the reproductions by appealing to notions of authenticity and originality. This, obviously, this appeal seems counterintuitive, as these are the categories that are called into question by the presentation of a mass-produced object as a work of art in the first place. Nevertheless, Duchamp's gesture did not entirely repudiate authorial ownership, even if the sculpture was submitted under an assumed name. There were a limited number of initiates aware of the true identity of the creator at the time, and the informed audience of the spectacle of his exclusion from the institution of art has increased substantially over the last 100 years. Pinocelli sought to reinstate the resistance of the object to official culture, but in a sense, this is only visible retrospectively as a consequence of its recuperation. So that's kind of part of how its meaning worked. This is Bjorn Hjeltoff, a student at Kongsvak University College of Arts, Crafts and Design, and he announced that he'd urinated on a replica of fountain, part of the permanent collection at the Moderna Museum in Stockholm on the 7th of May 1999. The director of the museum initially denied that there was any evidence to substantiate his claim. However, a tabloid newspaper then published a photograph of him engaging in the act and quoted him as saying, "I wanted to have a dialogue with Duchamp. He raised an everyday object to a work of art, and I'm turning it back again into an everyday object." In saying this, he's perhaps alluding to the idea of the reciprocal ready-made formulated by Duchamp, which Duchamp put into the form, "Use a Rembrandt as an ironing board." But Duchamp's proposal might appear to be realized by the act of urinating in the urinal, but the capacity for transforming a work of art into an everyday object remains the privilege of an artist, and draws much of its significance from its parasitic relation to our history. Indeed, Kjeltoff's intervention could be understood as an opportunistic attempt to annex some of the status accorded to this consecrated work of art for a student establishing his career, trying to exploit its fame to create scandal, generate some publicity. But that tactic of enlisting the popular press is typically used by emerging avant-gardes in their struggle to enter the discursive economy of the aesthetic sphere, as with the coverage that resulted from the resignation of Duchamp from the Independents. He was sufficiently well known on the art scene in New York, primarily for his New Descending a Staircase No. 2, for the incident to be reported in the newspapers. But for the most part, the original fountain's position taking within the cultural field relied on the minor institutions that generally sustain emerging avant-garde's network of patrons, galleries, and little magazines. So Walter Arensberg, a patron of artists in his circle, the fellow director of the Independents, who's apparently aware of the real provenance of Fountain, along with a few others, Henri Pierre Rocher, Beatrice Wood, and Louise Norton. There was the 291 Gallery, where the sculpture was briefly installed after it was rejected by the Independents, where it was photographed by Alfred Stieglitz, the famous photo that I showed at the beginning. And Blind Man, which was a little magazine produced by Rocher, Wood, and Duchamp, which published this elaborately composed image of the work, along with an anonymous statement, actually written by Beatrice Wood, justifying the sculpture and saying that it shouldn't have been refused by the Independents. So the recuperation of the ready-made does not consist in the assimilation of an object that's outside of the institution of art. Rather, it consists in its transition from the subfield of the emerging avant-garde to that of the consecrated avant-garde. So that's the journey it goes on. And Kjeltoff ignored this context in his attempt to inaugurate just a direct dialogue with Duchamp. So finally, similarly to MoMA in New York, the Tate Modern's fountain was exhibited encased in a clear Perspex box from the opening of the gallery in May 2000. And without Brian Eno's ingenuity, but with considerably more aplomb, Tsai Yuan and Jin Junji, known collectively as Mad for Real, simply urinated onto the vitrine instead. And they were applauded by onlookers and walked out of the Tate Modern without being challenged on the 21st of May. They'd gained some notoriety the previous October, Mad for Real, when they'd stripped to their underwear and jumped up and down on Tracy Emin's bed at the Tate Gallery, not Tate Modern. And on that occasion, they were arrested, but subsequently released without charge at the request of the artist and the gallery. Tate responded to their second intervention less charitably, announcing with a kind of hint of triumphalism. They made a big thing out of how, you know, they haven't managed to urinate on the urinal itself, so you know their intervention failed anyway. And they've been banned for life from Tate's premises. I don't know if that as artists as well, I'm not sure, but like, they've been banned for life for, quote, "threatening works of art and members of staff." In that order, yeah. So Mad for Real said that they hope to celebrate the spirit of modern art, specifically by recreating the controversy surrounding the original work forcing the audience to reevaluate what constitutes art and non art. I think it's doubtful whether their intervention could have prompted any such reevaluation at my republic that has largely internalized, kind of as a platitude, the idea that anything can be art. The spectators who witnessed it certainly just took it to be a performance, as indicated by their spontaneous applause. And it was also explicitly signposted as a creative work by being given a title to artist Pierson Duchamp's Urinal. And finally, Madrigal sought to promote their intervention with a film shot by an accomplice, which you can watch on YouTube. Similarly, in Blind Man, Stieglitz's photograph of the original fountain is presented alongside a caption, "The exhibit refused by the Independents." And the exhibition tag of the rejected sculpture is prominently displayed in the bottom left corner of the image. The text on the following pages likewise dramatizes the exclusion, this spectacle of the exclusion of the Urinal from the institution of art. As I've said, the spectacle itself relies on institutional mechanisms to function. Duchamp criticized the cultural field from within, mobilizing the resources that were available to him from the micro-community of the emerging avant-garde in New York in 1917. Fountain, nevertheless, disappeared into obscurity for 35 years before its physical reproduction in the 50s and 60s and its extensive discursive reproduction since then. The sculpture, in my view, arguably retains some of its critical force despite its recuperation, insofar as it continues to point to the institutional complex and framing, even as this its position within the cultural field and the composition of that field over time have been transformed. And although they received a certain amount of attention from the media in 2000, Matt for Real did not really succeed in scandalizing the aesthetic sphere with their action, much beyond provoking that predictable denial from the museum authorities that's quite common in these cases. And perhaps that's partly because by that stage, the gesture of urinating in the urinal had itself become an overt familiar.
Yeah, Sean.
Paul, I'm fascinated with this idea that the original work of art went missing. It's such a provocative piece, notorious in 20th century avant-garde art. You know, and your discussion obviously highlights how in recent decades it's been, so, you know, it's preoccupied a lot of kind of artistic and intellectual thinking in responding to it, and yet the original isn't there.
No.
It's not there for people to go and look at. It's not iconic like the Mona Lisa. It's not, you know, something that people can literally interact with. They're interacting with ideas of it or representations of it. So I think what I pick up from your talk is that the interventions are trying to intervene with the work of art, but in fact, they're not able to, because the work of art isn't there. And if I understand your critique correctly, I think you're saying that none of these interventions really have the force that the artist concerned hoped they would have. So in many ways, their attempt to have a dialogue with Duchamp fails because Duchamp's work perhaps was so provocative, so strong, so challenging that it, even 100 years later, it still has more force than any of these kind of pithy little gestures. It's not a question, but do you have a response to that?
Yeah, I mean,
spontaneous.
Yeah, in terms of kind of how the object was lost, I mean, I think it's kind of it's telling that sort of Duchamp treated the specific urinal that he had purchased with a kind of, you know, the meaning of it was not localized in that specific object. There's a photo that exists of his studio, and there's another urinal, so he probably, and it's after that, potentially after Duchamp, so there's possibly he had another one. The first replicas that he authorized was art gallery part saying, I want to show this work, so it doesn't exist, but if you just go out and buy any urinal you want, I can sign it, or with Arma, or you sign it. So a couple, there's like 17 roughly in existence, although amusingly it's disputed because is staying at Duchamp says that certain of these rivals are not. Duchamp, right? I mean, I don't understand how they could possibly be applying criteria like that. But it's about 17. A couple of the more interesting ones are oddities because they don't look like the famous Urinal. They just they're different shape, they're different design. The one that the Bjorn Keltoff urinated in, I think, is a slightly different shape. In the 50s and 60s, they basically, a guy called Arturo Schwartz, did them in a kind of artisanal way. So rather than buying them, he like made them from scratch to kind of slavishly imitate the original image. In terms of kind of, you know, do I think that the original gesture is like a better work of art, or, you know, that it remains effective still compared to these? Well, I don't know. I mean, I think the fact that the object has been so thoroughly recuperated and its kind of challenge to kind of make us reflect critically on the institutionality of art, you know, can often be understood as having been recuperated because it is now just such an icon of modern art. I'm kind of trying to suggest that I think that because its meaning consists in this relation to the institutional complex, that it continues to do that. Whether it doing that is kind of, you know, is in itself like an act of resistance that's particularly effective, I don't know. But I think that some of these, you know, as kind of critical interventions that attempt to deal with it, I think they are misconceived. But I don't know. I don't know if I would kind of rate them against each other necessarily, because I think they're kind of trying to do quite different things. Like the original and these interventions.
It almost feels like the responses to the art wouldn't actually even exist if the art piece didn't start. So you would never have someone walking into a gallery to see an art piece if you didn't put that in our gallery in the first place.
That's true.
So that dialogue wouldn't exist without those things.
That's
so to even say that that wasn't part of that concept, I think that's exactly the concept.
Mm.
That's exactly how that art piece is pivotal in how we explain how we interact with art now, is because it has opened up that dialogue. To say, why would you piss on something that someone has created? Why wouldn't you?
Yeah, the second question is the right question, I think. it's a urinal, right? So, like, putting it in that. I guess it's probably worth like sort of picking up on the idea that, you know, like it's a male urinal. This is like, you know, this is a group of six male artists sort of entering into this dialogue with this kind of prototypically kind of male. I'm not aware of any instances of female artists making kind of similar interventions with this. Given that I was kind of trying to treat these interventions as a kind of play on art criticism and art history, then I think, you know, it's not inappropriate that it's a kind of like male-dominated discourse, even, you know, even in this. I don't know what I really think about the original piece of art and like how good it is, because I think it's very, very hard to kind of access that piece of art because it just exists in this discursive economy that is really oversaturates that image. So I'm just trying to kind of sift through different ways of the people I've engaged with there, I guess.
I'm not really bad at names, but like there's like the dude who like puked like in a can and was selling them for like $1,000 for each like can. Like, what do you think about that? And like, would you consider that art?
Yeah, it could be. I mean,
the guy who's shit in the can, the Italian.
You did brand it pretty nicely.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good. How much were they?
Like $1,000 or something like that.
Well, that's quite pricey.
Yeah.
That's quite pricey. Sorry, which exhibition?
Media and Kavakov, the Russian duo, and they had pots and pans as part of the exhibition. So we became one of the cooking with some of the items that are part of the, you know, there's a whole range of interactions of artists who use who use everyday objects and people trying to bring them back to the original.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Is this the only
kind of...
I don't know. I mean, this is... I guess the thing about that, with if you were doing that with just any, you know, ready-made object, obviously the ready-made is a general form of art, and just to go in and consistently use them as the original object, would I think potentially be quite interesting. I don't know the extent to which people do that. The difference with these interventions, of course, is that they're simultaneously trying to some extent to profit from the consecrated status that the object has, because it's so famous. With other works of art that use ready-made items, there would be less of that going on. So, like, potentially, I could see a more kind of interesting dialogue being built up there than this one, which kind of inevitably ends up being one-sided.
Would it be exciting, disappointing, worrying, or something else if actually a prominent gallery and cog in the world of, I guess, the kind of art hierarchy actually invited artists to start peeing on their replica of the fountain, indeed it became sponsored by Deutsche Bank to have an annual Christmas fountain.
Yeah. Well, I mean... I don't know, can we apply pressure to like make this happen? I don't know, but yeah.
It's either the ultimate reclamation or the ultimate canonization.
Yes.
It's not clear which, right?
Well, I think, and it, you know, if there is something that's kind of interesting about the work that I'm trying to argue is continues to be interesting about the work, it's about the fact that, yeah, whatever you can think to do to try and kind of shut that mean, you end up in the same basic situation, which is it's both simultaneously the ultimate act of recuperation and it simultaneously continues to be resistant.
But it's the whole point is it's provoked a reaction consistently, so it's a successful piece of art, it's provoked a reaction.
It doesn't always provoke a reaction. I went when it was on display in I went and sort of stood there and just kind of watched to see how people interacted with it. And the most common reaction to the arrival was that people would come in, walk past, kind of very quickly acknowledging it because they know what it is. It's famous, so they just kind of like, and it's just this sort of clearly there's this sort of acceptance there that, oh right, yeah, that's art. So on one level it's clearly been accepted, but on another level people don't tend to engage with it very much, I think. I think they feel like there's not that much to engage with there, or at least that was my observation. It was like, to people it was a less interesting work of art than a lot of other stuff. I mean, these people have reacted to it, clearly.
Yeah, it's going to survive the times, though.
That's true.
Isn't that because it's not that interesting to look at? It's what's interesting about it is conceptual, is provocative.
Mm.
So the actual object itself, or the replicas of the absent object,
mm-hmm.
are actually not... You know, everyone's seen it, so we kind of, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's there, but the response is going on like here. That's right.
I agree. But that's not consistently been the response to it, right? Like, as in, there's a whole history of like art historical and art critical interventions with this object that basically do look at it in a kind of formalistic sense, you know, that kind of like, and try and fit it within a kind of history, comparing it to, you know, to a Madonna or to like various other things. There's loads of like sort of psychoanalysis inflected readings of it that came out as well. It's kind of quite, I kind of feel like they're just, I mean, yeah, I agree that it is a conceptual piece, obviously, and that it's, but I think particularly it's about institutionality. And that those kind of critics are sort of like being lured into this trap, right, of kind of applying traditional art critical approaches to.
I think if people were actually allowed to peer in it, instead of it being prohibited, it would have more response and more interest in it. So you could look and see if anyone's peed in it recently. No, I'm just saying, sorry, I know you need to move on, Pete Harper. I think the answer is that people should just be allowed to peer in it.
Then probably people wouldn't. I'm just being pessimistic here, but then probably invited to, no, maybe not.
Shit.
I like that.
Yeah,
it'll be the invitation. There's only one way to find out,
Michelle.
We should fashion our own line.
Okay, that's on the next one.